Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
I think you have to do it because they're very dishonest. And you need a fair press. And the press says, no, I see others. I have a few others that I'm doing. I'm going to, as an example, we're bringing, I'm doing this not because I want to. I'm doing this because I feel I have an obligation.
As a constitutional crisis looms in Washington, we look at President Trump's escalating war on the press as he ups his lawsuit against CBS to $20 billion. We'll speak to Jamil Jaffer, the head of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. Then to Guantanamo. The Center for Constitutional Rights has preemptively blocked the Trump administration from sending three detained Venezuelan migrants to the U.S. Navy base in Cuba. Then the acclaimed Palestinian author and poet, Mohammed El-Kurd. His new book is out today, Perfect Victims and the Politics of Appeal.
People need to understand that the root cause of all of the violence in Palestine is not inexplainable or complicated. It's simply stated Zionism, an ethno-nationalist supremacist ideology of expansion and discrimination and dispossession, and it must be opposed.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The ceasefire agreement between Hamas and Israel that would lead to the release of captives on both sides is now on the brink of collapse after Hamas said Israel repeatedly violated the agreement. Hamas cited recently deadly attacks by Israel, including four Palestinians killed over the weekend, as well as large shortfalls in the number of humanitarian aid and fuel trucks allowed to enter Gaza. Palestinians say Israel's barred all but 20,000 of the 200,000 tents that it agreed to send and has entirely failed in its commitment to allow 60,000 mobile homes in Gaza. On Monday, President Trump said the ceasefire deal should be canceled unless Hamas releases all the remaining hostages by Saturday, repeating his threat that all hell is going to break out in Gaza. Palestinians reacted to Trump's threat.
Donald Trump, the U.S. president, says that if Hamas does not provide us with the hostages on time, Gaza will become hell. What hell? Hell worse than what we already have? Hell worse than killing, the destruction, all the practices and inhumane crimes that have occurred in the Gaza Strip have not happened anywhere else in the world.
Most of Gaza remains without running water or reliable power. And most families lack basic services like sanitation and health care. This week, heavy rain and strong winds have left hundreds of thousands of people living in makeshift tents exposed to the severe cold and wet conditions. Meanwhile, President Trump has said Palestinians will have no right of return to Gaza under his plan to expel the territory's entire Palestinian population and for the U.S. to own Gaza. Trump spoke to Fox News' Brett Baer.
We'll build beautiful communities for the 1.9 million people. We'll build beautiful communities, safe communities. Could be five, six, could be two. But we'll build safe communities a little bit away from where they are, where all of this danger is. In the meantime, I would own this. Think of it as a real estate development for the future. It would be a beautiful piece of land.
Would the Palestinians
no
have the right
money
to return?
Spent. No, they wouldn't, because they're going to have much better housing.
President Trump's meeting with Jordan's King Abdullah at the White House today. Ahead of the meeting, Trump threatened to cut off U.S. aid to Jordan and to Egypt unless the two countries agree to take in the more than 2 million Palestinians Trump is seeking to permanently expel from Gaza. Both Egypt and Jordan have rejected Trump's idea, which has drawn scorn and condemnation across the Arab world and from world leaders. This week, more than 110 U.S. organizations said they're deeply alarmed by Trump's recent statements. The NGOs wrote in a joint public letter, quote, Palestine is not just an idea, it's a place. It's a homeland to the Palestinian people. To participate in, facilitate, or endorse their removal from it would violate every precept of international law, devastate the rules-based international order that protects us all, do irreversible harm to America's global influence, and be an act of unconscionable immorality, they wrote. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces raided the educational bookshop, a beloved cultural hub in East Jerusalem that was established more than four decades ago. Israeli soldiers detained Palestinian owners Ahmed and Mahmoud Muna and seized hundreds of books on Palestine, including an English-language coloring book for children titled From the River to the Sea and Gaza in Crisis by Noam Chomsky and the Israeli scholar Ilan Pappe. We'll have more on this later in the broadcast with the acclaimed Palestinian poet and journalist Mohammed El-Kurb. The Trump administration's pushed the United States deeper into a constitutional crisis after a federal judge in Rhode Island said the White House ignored his previous order halting Trump's sweeping federal funding freeze. U.S. District Judge John McConnell ruled Monday the Trump administration continues to violate his clear and unambiguous January 29th ruling to keep federal funds flowing. The New York Times reports it's the first time a judge has expressly declared the Trump administration is disobeying a judicial mandate. Attorneys general from 22 states warned in a court filing Friday that Trump's refusal to heed the judge's order continues to cause immediate and irreparable harm, jeopardizing, quote, jobs, lives, and the social fabric of life, unquote. In Washington, D.C., hundreds of protesters rallied outside the offices of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau Monday after the Trump administration moved to shut down the agency's headquarters and cut off its funding. Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren, credited with creating the CFPB, slammed Elon Musk's Doge operation and the Office of Management and Budget's director, Russell Vogt, saying their attempt to shutter the CFPB is, quote, the payoff to the rich guys.
This fight is about more than just our financial rules and regulations. This fight is about more than just Democrat versus Republican politics. This fight is about hardworking people versus the billionaires who want to squeeze more and more and more money out of them.
A federal judge has indefinitely extended the deadline for government workers to accept a government buyout issued by Elon Musk's Doge operation, offering 8 months of pay and benefits to anyone taking an early retirement. Unions representing hundreds of thousands of government workers celebrated the extension as a temporary victory, while legal challenges to the buyout offer proceed in court. President Trump signed an executive order Monday directing the Department of Justice to stop enforcing the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act of 1977, which bars U.S. citizens from bribing foreign government officials to win business. Separately, Trump fired the head of the Office of Government Ethics Monday. David Huitema was nominated by President Biden and confirmed last November by the Senate before Trump fired him just weeks into his five-year tenure. Meanwhile, the head of the independent federal agency that protects whistleblowers, Hampton Dellinger, filed a lawsuit Monday challenging his dismissal from the U.S. Office of Special Counsel by President Trump. The Project on Government Oversight called it an illegal firing that, quote, undermines the office that investigates whistleblower disclosures of wrongdoing and enforces the law meant to keep partisan politics out of the federal workforce, unquote. On Monday, a federal court issued a stay allowing Dellinger to keep his job for at least a few days longer while the court considers his lawsuit. A third federal judge has blocked President Trump's executive order seeking to end birthright citizenship for children of undocumented immigrants living in the U.S. There are at least nine lawsuits challenging Trump's order, including one by the ACLU. In related news, Trump's Homeland Security Department is looking to deputize officials with the Internal Revenue Service's criminal unit and other Treasury Department personnel to assist in federal immigration enforcement. The U.S. Justice Department has directed Manhattan prosecutors to drop corruption charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. Emil Bove, Trump's acting deputy attorney general, wrote that the DOJ decided to interfere because the indictment against Adams created a hurdle in Adams' ability to carry out Trump's crackdown on immigrant communities. The DOJ is calling for the charges to be dropped without prejudice, meaning they can be revived at any point. The order came on the same day Adams reportedly ordered his staff not to publicly criticize Trump and not to intervene with federal immigration enforcement. This comes amidst mounting confusion and mixed messages from the Adams administration over how workers should respond to ICE if they show up at city buildings like schools and hospitals. Last month, Mayor Adams traveled to Palm Beach personally to meet with Trump in Mar-a-Lago and attended his inauguration. Queens Assembly member, New York City mayoral candidate Zohran Mamdani said, quote, "In the midst of a right-wing billionaire assault on the working class of our city, Eric Adams sold us out for another personal favor," Mamdani said. On Monday, Trump pardoned former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, who in 2011 was convicted and jailed for attempting to sell Barack Obama's U.S. Senate seat. Blagojevich's prison term was cut short in 2020 when Trump commuted his sentence during his first presidency. The U.S. Senate voted Monday to advance Tulsi Gabbard's nomination to become Director of National Intelligence. Many Democrats have opposed Gabbard's nomination over her 2017 meeting with Syria's then-leader Bashar al-Assad and past comments blaming NATO for Russia's war in Ukraine. This is California Senator Adam Schiff speaking on the Senate floor Monday.
She can apologize for Assad or Putin or any other murderous dictator to her heart's content. But we're not considering Ms. Gabbard for some position in which her bizarre fondness for foreign despots is beside the point. She is not the nominee for Postmaster General. We're considering her for one of the most important jobs in our intelligence community. And for that, Tulsi Gabbard is a walking five-alarm fire and must be rejected.
During her Senate confirmation hearing, Tulsi Gabbard repeatedly refused to call Edward Snowden a traitor. Sam Altman, the CEO and co-founder of OpenAI, said his company is not for sale after Elon Musk and his investors on Monday offered to buy OpenAI's for-profit assets for $97.4 billion. Altman responded to the bid by posting on X, "No, thank you, but we will buy Twitter for $9.74 billion if you want." Altman has been attempting to disentangle OpenAI, which developed ChatGPT, from its nonprofit status and board. OpenAI was co-founded by Musk in 2015, but he left in 2019. Vice President J.D. Vance, who's in Paris for the AI Action Summit, as is Sam Altman, warned other countries against regulating U.S. tech and blasted the European Union's ongoing efforts to regulate AI, social media, and tech monopolies. And the Pentagon has ordered an immediate ban on transgender military recruits and halted all gender-affirming medical procedures for active-duty military. Legal groups, including Human Rights Campaign, have filed lawsuits against Trump's anti-trans EO on behalf of military members. On Friday, the Education Department ordered an end to programs that support transgender students. Here in New York, trans youth and their allies held a massive rally in Union Square to defend trans rights amidst recent moves by local hospitals to halt gender-affirming care. This is 14-year-old Nero.
As a pre-existing NYU Langone patient, the recent events concerning NYU and the orange in office is really upsetting. I'm not directly as affected as others who have recently have been denied health care. This is pure discrimination. This is offensive. This should not be allowed. And I want to finish by saying that we as a community will not stop fighting this fight.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
As a constitutional crisis grows in Washington, we begin today's show looking at the Trump administration's escalating attacks on press freedom. Last week, the interim U.S. attorney in Washington, Edward Martin, threatened to prosecute anyone, including journalists, who, quote, target or, quote, impede Elon Musk and Doge. That's the Department of Government Efficiency. Martin's letter came a day after Musk claimed it was a crime to identify the young computer engineers who've helped him gain access to highly sensitive information at agencies across Washington. Meanwhile, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has opened an investigation into San Francisco-based KCBS over the radio station's reporting on recent immigration raids. The FCC has also opened a broader investigation of NPR and PBS and their practice of airing underwriting announcements. On Friday, Donald Trump openly called for The Washington Post to fire longtime columnist Eugene Robinson after he accused Trump of trampling the Constitution. Meanwhile, a number of major news organizations face accusations of already bending a knee to Trump. In December, ABC settled a defamation suit brought by Trump by making a $15 million donation to his future presidential library. CBS's parent company, Paramount Global, is reportedly in talks to settle a multi-billion dollar lawsuit filed by Trump, who accused 60 Minutes of deceptively editing an interview with Kamala Harris. Trump initially sought $10 billion in the lawsuit, but he's upped it now to $20 billion. Last week, CBS took the unusual step of handing over its unedited tapes to the FCC. While the tapes showed no wrongdoing on CBS's part, many believe Paramount might still settle the lawsuit. This all is happening as Paramount seeks federal approval for its $8 billion merger with Skydance Media. We're joined right now by Jamil Jaffer, executive director of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. His recent New York Times opinion piece is headlined, "This is not a moment to settle with Trump." Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Jamil.
Thanks, Amy.
So we just went through some of the cases, but if you can go through them in depth and explain what is happening here. Is the media obeying in advance?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I see it. I see a kind of failure of courage among the largest and most powerful media organizations in the country. You started with the ABC settlement. This is a case that arose out of George Stephanopoulos saying on TV that President Trump had been found liable for rape, when in fact the jury had found him liable for sexual assault. Trump sued, claiming that he'd been defamed. I don't think that there—
And let's be clear, it was the judge who said, in common parlance, this would be rape.
That's right. That's right. I don't think that Trump had any chance of winning that lawsuit. If ABC had contested it, ABC would have been protected by the New York Times versus Sullivan rule. New York Times versus Sullivan is a 60-year-old case that gives citizens broad power to— or broad latitude to criticize government officials, makes it very difficult for public officials to recover in defamation actions. I don't think there's any way that ABC would have lost that case, but they settled the case. Second one is Meta's settlement with Trump. This is over Meta's decision, or Facebook and Instagram's decision, to deplatform Trump after January 6th. Trump sued, claiming that his First Amendment rights had been violated. This, I think, is a totally frivolous case. There's no way that Trump would have won that case against Meta, but Meta settled it as well for $25 million. Again, all going to Trump's presidential library. And then finally, this reported CBS settlement, or possible CBS settlement, with Trump over the action, over the case that involved the editing of this Kamala Harris interview. I don't think that CBS edited that interview in any unusual way at all. The kind of editing they did is routine for journalism, for media organizations. Trump knows that. Again, no chance that Trump would have won that case, but CBS is reportedly thinking about settling it. So what I see here is media organizations that have the power to fight back against Trump but aren't doing it. I think that's a failure of courage, and it has implications for those particular media organizations because I think it affects their credibility and their prestige. But it has larger press freedom implications as well, because every time one of those media organizations settles a case, the next organization finds it more difficult to resist Trump. And this is a moment in which we need these organizations to hold the powerful to account, hold Trump to account, and this is exactly what they should not be doing.
And Jamil, what about this latest story this week about the FCC investigating a San Francisco radio station, KCBS, for its coverage of immigration enforcement in San Jose?
Yeah, I mean, here too, I think you see the Trump administration trying to use its regulatory authorities in a way that chills press freedom, chills legitimate reporting. No question here that that radio station was within its rights to report what it did. And what Trump is trying to do, or what the FCC is trying to do here, is chill not just that radio station, but other radio stations and other media organizations from engaging in reporting that is inconvenient to the administration. I mean, I mentioned the CBS case. Another aspect of that case involves the FCC, with the FCC having demanded from CBS that it turn over unedited transcripts of its interview with Kamala Harris. And I don't think in
and
another...
And they released them.
I don't think in another, in any other era, a news organization would have just turned over those transcripts without at least trying to get a judge to narrow the request or look at the transcripts in camera before turning them over. But CBS just turned them over. I think that there's a real risk here that on paper we're going to have all the First Amendment rights in the world. The First Amendment is going to look great on paper, but the organizations that we need to assert their First Amendment rights to defend press freedom are increasingly just not doing it. I mean, I've named a few of the settlements, but even before we got to the settlements, there were the LA Times and the Washington Post, which quashed editorials that would have been that would have provoked Trump. This happened before the election. Then there were the big tech companies that all made $1 million donations to Trump's inaugural fund. I think what we're seeing is media organizations, including social media organizations, lining up to ingratiate themselves with President Trump. And that is an extremely troubling thing at this particular moment.
And, of course, it's not just media organizations, universities. Talk about the free speech rights that are endangered, increasingly endangered at universities by the Trump administration, for instance, threatening to deport pro-Palestinian students.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is it's a larger issue across society. Many of the institutions that we need to serve as checks on government power at a moment like this are not doing their jobs. Now, this question about, in what circumstances can the government deport non-citizens for exercising their First Amendment rights, I think is a hugely significant question. And I want people to understand that the First Amendment protects non-citizen students at American universities just like it protects everybody else. The government cannot constitutionally deport people simply because they have exercised their First Amendment rights, simply because they have criticized a war overseas or criticized our government or criticized another government. Those are not constitutionally permissible justifications for deporting somebody. So you don't have to take my word for it, because a couple of years ago, the Knight Institute, my institute, filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the Biden administration, and we were able to get two legal memos, in which the Trump administration had considered its authority to engage in these kinds of deportations based on First Amendment activity. And Trump administration lawyers wrote memos that acknowledge that non-citizens at universities in the United States are protected by the First Amendment, and that deporting them on the basis of their speech would almost certainly be unconstitutional.
And then, Jamil Jaffer, talk about what happened Friday night with the casino magnate Steve Wynn asking the Supreme Court to revisit the Times versus Sullivan defamation rule, the Supreme Court decision, one of the two most important press freedom cases.
Yeah, so I mentioned New York Times versus Sullivan already. This is a Has been a campaign by some conservatives over the last few years to try to get the Supreme Court to narrow or overrule New York Times versus Sullivan, which would be a very big deal because it's New York Times versus Sullivan more than any other case that protects our ability to criticize government officials, which is core to our democracy.
And what was it established under, New York Times versus Sullivan? What case was that?
So it's called New York Times versus Sullivan. It's a case involving the New York Times was sued by a Southern police official who was concerned about civil rights activism in the South and complained in particular about an ad in the New York Times that he said accurately was inaccurate. The ad included some inaccuracies in it. And he said because the ad included inaccuracies, the New York Times was liable, I think it was for $500,000, which at the time would have been crushing liability even for the New York Times. And if he had won that case, other news organizations reporting on the civil rights movement would have been crushed as well. But the Supreme Court said, if you're criticizing government officials, you have to have broad latitude even to get things wrong. So unless the public official can show what's called actual malice, and unless the public official can show that the newspaper or the writer recklessly published false information or deliberately published false information, there's no recovery possible. The First Amendment forecloses recovery. So now some conservatives are pushing to get the Supreme Court to overrule that decision. I think it's a misguided campaign, even, you know, if you want the things that these conservatives want. I think this is going to backfire on them. But this cert petition that was filed on Friday night, this request that the Supreme Court hear the case, is another effort in this longer campaign to get the Supreme Court to either scale back or overrule New York Times versus Sullivan.
Jamil Jaffer, thanks so much for being with us, director of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. We'll link to your piece in the New York Times. This is not a moment to settle with Trump. Next up, Guantanamo. It was Super Bowl night when the Center for Constitutional Rights preemptively blocked the Trump administration from sending three detained Venezuelan migrants to the U.S. Navy base in Cuba. We'll talk about this and more in a moment. By Billy Preston. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Juan, there are a lot of challenges right now in this country, but you've been looking at the kind of successful organizing that's going on with immigrant groups on the ground. Talk about what you see there in Chicago.
Yeah, Amy, well, you know, despite much media attention on the ramping up of mass deportations by the Trump administration, coverage, by the way, that the White House has aggressively orchestrated, the actual number of deportations during the first few weeks have hardly lived up to the hype. Homeland Security officials acknowledged yesterday that around 11,000 immigrants supposedly folks who have committed crimes or undocumented have been arrested, an average of about 500 a day. And just half of those, according to the department's own statistics, are supposedly criminals. Others are what they call collateral arrests. At that rate, it would take about 6 years just to deport 1 million people, not 5, 6, 7, or 11, just 1 million people would take 6 years. So obviously the worst is yet to come if we're to believe that Trump is actually serious about these deporting millions and millions of people. But few people are focusing on the inevitable resistance that immigrant rights groups are certain to launch. As we used to say in the 1960s, wherever there is oppression, there is resistance. And immigration activists that I've talked to in recent days are right now in the midst of coordinating a strike.